Hello, I'm Brent.
And I'm Scott.
And this
is Strange Embers.
The Lone Star State. We have made it to episode 10. That is Texas in the 50 State Haunt series we're doing. Scott, what do you think about these so far? Have you found anything interesting? Any places that you probably would have never even thought about even researching into something?
Yeah, actually I have. And it's kind of crazy whenever you're going through state to state. You know, you hear these tall tales and you hear all these stories. And you've always asked, like, how did they originate? And then you start doing the research on each state, like we're doing right now for the 50 State Haunt, and you're like, oh, wow. So that's where this story came from. That's how the lore got started, or that's what that meaning is. And I'm more so referring to one of mine that I have today that I think you'll know what I'm the saying, at least, when you talk about homicide and murder. It is a common saying of a typical lover's quarrel, almost. But I've really enjoyed it. Not much so just for the paranormal aspect, but the historic and knowledge-based aspect of it.
And that's probably the same for me. The history of these places is probably some of the things that I like doing these more than anything, because I've said before throughout the series that whenever we travel anywhere, we've always went and did ghost tours at different places. And that's probably one of my favorite part of the ghost tours is learning the history of the place right. You're at, the buildings, all of that.
I agree. Have you ever heard of Clara Crane, also known as the Candy Lady? Candy Lady?
That does not ring a bell.
Can I tell you about the Candy Lady?
You can tell me about the Candy Lady. Are we about to have another are we about to have another Muffin Man thing? Do you know the Candy Lady?
I don't know the Candy Lady. But do you not know the Candy Lady? All right. So
I'm beginning to see a pattern.
This is a lore base almost, because there was really no evidence behind this. It was just all accusations. Clara Crane was known as the Candy Lady. She was accused of poisoning her husband in 1895. She gave him some caramels, or caramels for you that like to say it that way, that were laced with some form of poison that ended up being his demise. A few years before she allegedly killed her husband, though, the Crane's 5-year-old daughter died. No cause of death. Just sudden death. Clara ended up blaming her husband for the passing of their daughter because he wasn't watching her, wasn't paying attention to her, which is kind of why a lot of people say that she's the one that killed her husband was out of hatred and spite because he allowed the daughter to die. Claire was placed in a North Texas lunatic asylum that is now known as the Terrell State Hospital. In 1903, children started going missing near her old property. Now, granted, she's already in the insane asylum. And children start going missing while she's there, but they're close to her property. Children said candy would be left on their window while they were sleeping. Sometimes there would be notes on the wrappers around the candy that said, "Please eat me." After several children started going missing, the townspeople believed it was Clara, the woman that killed her husband with poison candy, who was responsible for their disappearances. A nearby farmer found human teeth in his fields, and the town sheriff ultimately got killed. The town sheriff had forks shoved in his eyes and was found with a bunch of candy in his pockets. No one really knows whatever happened to Clara Crane, But to this day, it is believed the Candy Lady still roams, luring little children with candy and pulling their teeth out and stabbing them in the eyes with forks.
That is very interesting.
Right? That's one of my really, really interesting ones I have today, Brent.
I'm going to jump into my first one with Barber's Bookstore. It was started by Bert and Alice Barber. They opened their bookstore back in 1925. But by 1931, they had divorced. After they divorced, Alice still kept the bookstore open and ran it and raised three kids, all while going through the Great Depression era also. And through this, her bookstore made it. And it carried on and it thrived. And 99 years later, till this day, it is still open. You can still go to Barber's Bookstore currently today.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Where's it located?
Fort Worth,
okay.
It is also known as an icon for Fort Worth and the oldest independent bookstore in Texas. The bookstore did relocate a few times before settling on its home that it is currently in. It's a three-story building at 901 Throckmorton Street.
That's a tongue twister.
I was going to let it slide, but you didn't bring it up.
If you read that really quick.
The three-story building that it does call its home even till this day, it was built in 1908. The building was a hotel at one point. It was a cafe, and it was also rumored to have been a bordello at a period of time. It is also said that there are ghosts that flicker the lights, throws books onto the floor, and makes sounds of boots stomping up and down the stairs of the third floor of the building, which the third floor of the building now is home to about 60,000-ish books that they're stored in there. But that used to be the Adams Hotel. And above each one of the rooms is still the hotel room numbers are still above each one of the rooms on the third floor. So the guy that actually owns the bookstore now, after the Barber name, after she sold the bookstore and it went through a couple of hands, the people that still own it now, he said that especially during the coronavirus time, that it got pretty bad during that point in time, because this place is as far as the bookstore being there and being a brick and mortar and people actually coming in to buy books there, that's becoming more rare. This is more of kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a...
electronic generation?
No, but I'm talking about for the building and the books and everything. It's more of like a nostalgia. People come by. It's like a museum as such. And so you did say, as far as sales, online sales and doing all that, has really saved the bookstore being able to still be there. And they have also opened a cafe in the back. So there's a cafe in the back. So the side door of the building is the entrance to the cafe. So he has revenue from that too. But he also said that without revenue, the bookstore can't stay open. So online sales have really helped. But if you're in Fort Worth, Texas, go by the Barber Bookstore.
This sounds very interesting.
Buy a book, hang out, go to the third floor, see if you can see anything.
Yeah, but see, I would be afraid that book might bring that entity with me. And if I go anywhere, I want that entity to stay where it's at. I don't want it to come home with me.
I don't matter to me. I'll bring all the books. I don't have any history of the ghost there. That's all I know about it.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it's got a lot of history concerning everything it was. Have you ever heard of the saying kiss and kill?
No.
You have not?
I don't think so.
Okay. So a kiss and kill was originated from this one particular homicide. However, it's used a lot in romantic situations. We'll get to it and you'll understand where it came from. So I want to do Odessa High School Theater, which was actually known to be the historic start of the kiss and kill story. And it refers to a homicide in March 20th, 1961, of Betty Williams, who was a teenager from Odessa, Texas. She was apparently killed by her ex-boyfriend, John Mac Herring, at her own request in Winkler County, Texas. Herring was placed in trial for the murder, but was acquitted for the killing after his lawyers argued that he had temporary insanity. Now, this case, for years on end, ran in the newspapers throughout the United States in the 60s. So, to give just a little bit of background behind who Betty and John Mac were, both of which were students at Odessa High School, Betty had somewhat countercultural views. And it was not considered popular. John Mack, on the other hand, was a high school football player for the varsity team. And he was very popular. Betty liked to engage in sexual activities with a lot of boys at the school, but she would never hold down a relationship with them. She was just a really fast person, which at that time was a taboo thing. The two became lovers, but Herring would later break up with her after being taunted and humiliated by his friends for having a sexual relationship with her. And he was afraid that it was going to ruin his reputation and possible scholarship opportunities coming up. After they wound up breaking up and she was no longer able to have any kind of relations with him, she wound up asking a bunch of her friends, and including some of her previous relationships, if they would kill her.
So in essence, she was looking for assisted suicide?
Correct. All the friends took it as a joke, except for Herring. So on March 20th, 1961, Herring and Williams went next to a stock tank on his parents' hunting property in Winkler County, 26 miles from downtown Odessa. He wound up shooting her in the head with a 12-gauge shotgun, destroying much of it. After he killed her, he attached weights to her body and threw her into the tank. Herring stated that Williams chose the weapon he used to kill her, and on March 22, 1961, she was reported missing. After being reported missing, John Mac Herring took the police exactly where the body was after he was interrogated. Herring was tried for murder but was acquitted. His lawyers argued he had temporary insanity. Due to this, he was tried twice, once in Kermit, Texas, in a hearing that was only meant to determine whether Herring was sane at the time. And after a legal challenge, the Texas Supreme Court stated that the judge lacked the authority to do so. A second trial was held in Beaumont, Texas, resulting in an acquittal. Odessa High School staff did not provide counseling after the homicide occurred, and Herring did not lose any type of social status from the event. Instead, he gained a lot of town gossip about him and Williams, accusing her of leading him astray. Shelton Williams, which was a cousin of Betty, who ironically was a rival football player to John Mack, he ended up writing a book about the whole situation called Washed in the Blood. I haven't read all of it, but I have read some of it, and it actually is really good. So if you want more detail on this, definitely check that book out. It was published in 2006. There's also the case was also covered on a TV show called A Crime to Remember. So You can watch that too. I think it's the last episode on season 3. Odessa High students have reported ghost sightings and paranormal phenomenons at the school for decades. Up to 2006, until a book was written that centered around Betty Williams. Odessa High's administration applied paint to the school's auditorium windows to counter the ghost story culture. So almost like the one you talked about where they break the walls up, they just painted these so you couldn't see the silhouettes through the windows.
Interesting.
Many believe her ghost still haunts the halls of Odessa High School to this day. Now, there have been many cases of students performing theatrics in the theater and having very strange things happen to them. Like a silhouette of a girl standing on the balcony watching as they perform when there's no one there. And there was another case I read. This young boy went upstairs to drop the curtain down and turn off the stage lights after the performance. He went up, came down, nothing out of the ordinary, nothing happened. But when he got back downstairs to meet his mom, she saw purple lipstick on his arm, like somebody gave him a kiss on his arm. She said, "Well, where'd you get that from?" He said, "Well, I don't know because I never let anybody kiss me." So everybody made jokes and centered that to be Williams giving him a seal of approval for his performance. Now, he did later claim that to this day, that still gives him chill bumps thinking about.
Incredible. I love how theaters, just about every theater has a story also.
Right.
That was a very interesting story. It's kind of a quick story I have also. It's the USS Lexington. Some of the history of this one just really caught my eye. Like I said, I love the history of a bunch of these places. The USS Lexington is a floating museum now. You can go there and walk all over the ship and take tours of the ship. They actually do ghost tours and like overnight stays on the ships, kind of ghost tours and stuff like that as well. A little bit of history about the USS Lexington. So in 1941, it was in process of being built, the USS Cabot. As it was being built, USS Lexington, the name of the USS Cabot was changed, and it became the USS Lexington as a tribute to the first one from the war. February of 1943, the second USS Lexington was put into service and headed out for the Pacific. But unfortunately, on her maiden voyage out, her first casualty was in 1939. It was a Heisman Trophy winner, Niall Kinnick, who was training in flight when his plane careened into the sea. Lexington helped on many raids. In December of 1943, the Lexington aided on a raid where her planes sank a cargo ship, damaged Japanese cruisers, and downed 30 fighters.
Dang.
But one of the Japanese cruisers did hit her with a torpedo, killing 9 sailors. Despite the smoke and rising water in the Lexington, the crew made her watertight and limped her back to Pearl Harbor. The Japanese thought that their hit was a good hit, and as it limped away, they, as far as their records, they marked the ship as being sank because they didn't think that it would limp back. She returned back into service by 1944 and participated in several attacks on Japanese placements in the Central Pacific. She aided attacks. I'm skipping a bunch of these names because I'm not going to try these things.
She aided in a bunch of attacks and survived.
Yes. She aided in a bunch of attacks, survived heavy counterattacks, damaged, defended off fighters coming at her, downed 17 more enemy planes. She has a record. Despite not being sunk by a single bomb, the Japanese again listed her as sunk in battle. In fact, the Japanese, after listed her as sunk again, they nicknamed the USS Lexington now the Blue Ghost. Because I imagine at this point in time, the Japanese probably thought this was a ghost ship coming back for them over and over. A few months later, Lexington went on to serve in the Battle of the Philippine Sea. This battle devastated Japanese air strength and downed 300 Japanese planes in one single day. Over the next few months, the USS Lexington assisted in numerous missions across the Pacific. 1950, although the USS Lexington did not actively serve in the Korean War, she did participate in exercises, practice maneuvers, and search and rescue operations throughout the 1950s. By 1976, as Vietnam War came in, she ended up as the last XS-class carrier in service after USS Oriskany was decommissioned in 1976. And if I did not say the name right, I do apologize. And she was later the first ship in the U.S. Navy to have women crew members stationed aboard in 1980. It wasn't until 1991 when the USS Lexington was finally decommissioned, and rather than put her in a scrapyard, the U.S. Navy donated her to the city of Corpus Christi to be refitted as a museum ship. And that's where she sits till today. So, with that being said, there is a couple of ghost stories on this. And my favorite ones that I read about is sometimes when they're taking tours of these ships, they'll have tour guides and they'll have groups that go around. And there have been several, but so multiple people that come back from these tours that when they get back, they'll tell them when they got into the lower part of the ship that they learned so much about the ship, and the tour guide was so informational about everything, and they loved the time period era uniform that they put on to be their tour guide. And after they tell them this, the people tell them, we don't have any tour guides here that wear period outfits, and we don't have any tour guides in the bottom of the ship. This happens quite often. It's even said that some people, if they get separated from their tour guide groups and they just kind of wander off, that some of these workers in period uniforms will find them and help assist them to get back up to the top and out of the ship so they don't get lost down there. That is the USS Lexington.
I love history on warships.
I do too.
Warships are amazing to me. Yeah, I like warship history. But I am going to conclude my research in Texas on another legend who is known as the ghostly nurse of Bexar County in San Antonio. Janine Ann Jones. Have you ever heard that name?
I have not.
She was actually a serial killer.
Really?
Jean Ann Jones, she was a serial killer, and she was responsible for the deaths of up to 60 infants and children in her care as a licensed vocational nurse. She was a nurse from 1970 to 1980. Well, the 80s, from the 70s to the 80s. In 84, Jones was convicted of murder and injury to a child, and she used injections of digoxin, heparin, and later succinylcholine. She used all these drugs, causing numerous deaths. The exact number of victims remains unknown. However, hospital officials allegedly misplaced and destroyed records of Jones's activities to prevent further litigations after Jones's first conviction. One of her famous quotes as she was on trial, "I haven't killed a damn soul. I always cry when babies die. You can almost explain away an adult death. When you look at an adult die, at least you can say they had a full life. When a baby dies, they've been cheated. They've been cheated out of a hell of a lot." And it's still said to see things going on around that ICU that she performed in, all these murders. You still hear babies crying and all that. So that's just the lore behind it. They said she killed all these. Was she convicted of all of them? No. She's only convicted of one. But under the care of her, almost every infant and child she had ended up dying.
That's crazy.
That actually might be an interesting one to cover one day.
Very possibly so, because that's very, very crazy that if one or two spread out, maybe, but if there are multiple deaths
up to 60
under your watch, who's not investigating this right by that point?
Now, obviously, that's lore, because we don't have hard evident proof that she did all of them.
Right, but still, even at that, it's just crazy to me that there could be multiples that happened and just like no investigation, basically. Because there had to be. Well, you also said that the hospital was covering up stuff too. So not so much that there wasn't an investigation as much as they just didn't care.
That they probably knew and didn't want to say nothing.
Because at the same time, that brings bad publicity.
Yep.
It's still a business.
Still a business.
Very good story.
Thank you, sir.
All right, so I'm going to jump into my last one. This one has a very interesting history. Also, it is called the Magnolia Hotel in Seguin, Texas. This hotel started as a two-room log cabin built in 1840. The hotel was built beside the log cabin in 1847. This hotel spent some time being a stop for stagecoaches making runs to ports to San Antonio. There was also a bell that was on site, and there was a slave boy that would ring the bell. And being a boy, he couldn't reach it, so there was a rock that was beside the bell, or a stone, a block of sorts. And they said it's still there to the day, and you can see where it was at. He would have to stand on it to ring the bell. The bell that was there actually came from the Alamo. It was found in a river. It was pulled out of the river and it was put at this hotel for some time. And then the bell left the hotel. It was purchased and moved to a museum. By March of 2012, this hotel was on a list of the most endangered historic places. March the 1st of 2013, it was purchased and privately funded to be restored. It is currently a bed and breakfast and gives ghost tours on set dates. You can go to the website and you can reserve your room for a bed and breakfast stay. You can reserve a time to go on a ghost tour. One of the most interesting things about if you stay at this hotel, second floor of the hotel, it is the bed and breakfast area. If you stay there, if you rent that section of it and you stay there, you're given access to the whole 2,800 square foot, 16 room, second floor area, which the majority of that is unrestored, has no power, no heating, no cooling, nothing is on that side. It is left as is. And the reason it's left that way is because they said it's the most active part of the hotel. You have full access to it by staying there. So if you want to investigate, it's not blocked off. There's a door. Open the door. Go to it. Go investigate it all you want to while you're, you know, on your stay. There was a medium, a psychic that was there. And she said that there are 13 ghosts staying in this hotel currently. I'm going to go through a few of them. There is a cowboy that jumped off of a stagecoach and then shot himself in the head. There is a salesman that slit his own throat ear to ear in the living room of the suite up there. There is a girl named Willie who offed herself and her unborn child in a bathtub. One of the ghosts, his last name was Campbell. He was the original owner of the cabin that was there and the hotel that was built. He was a Texas Ranger, and he was at the 1840 peace treaty that went wrong in San Antonio, Texas, resulting in a bloody battle and the decimation of an entire Comanche delegation. After that, Campbell was stabbed, scalped, robbed, and left for dead. When the other Texas Rangers got there and found him, they buried him on site. There is another ghost named Sarah who haunts the ballroom. She died of a broken heart, waiting for a lover who never showed up. And all of these tales from these that I'm telling you about come from apparently the ghosts themselves. This medium that was on site, when she was there, these are the things that was told to her. There's a ghost named Amelia that died in her sleep. There is one ghost of he was a squatter. Police just found him dead. That during a time of when this hotel was in disrepair before it was bought and started to be restored, it was a very popular place for squatters to have to just have shelter. Police came in one night to run everybody off, and they did find a man dead there. And the last one I'm going to talk about is a serial killer named Wilhelm Faust. He stayed in this hotel the very night after he axed a 12-year-old girl to death that was named Emma Volker in 1874. And so apparently the ghost of Wilhelm is also there. This has been a very popular spot for ghost hunters to be there and check things out. You can find several clips of different ghost hunting adventures and stuff like that that have been there and did investigations. But I would like to show a couple of clips that I found, and I'm going to play those for you. After these play, we'll talk about this, okay? Here's the first one. This was also the clips that are being played. I'm going to put the links to where these are at on YouTube, but the first one comes from KSAT channel 12, and we're going to play this now. You ready?
you see the shadow?
I did not see the shadow.
Look in the door.
I'm going to look again. But look, I'm going to play it one more. I'm going to play it one more time for everybody. So you're saying look at the door. I'm also going to tell you, do you see the dress beside the window? I got the cursor going around.
Yeah.
Watch the dress right there, too. I'm going to watch the door this time. Watch the dress. We're going to play it again, okay?
That's spooky, dude.
I did see the shadow that time. I don't know how I missed that. I've watched this video probably 4 or 5 times. I don't know how I missed it. But that's the first clip I have. The second clip I have comes from a YouTube channel called Strange Town. And I'm going to put a link to their channel in the description as well. This one, this clip's going to be probably about a minute and a half long or so. So I'm going to let it play. And after it's done playing, we'll talk about it. You ready? Clips I have.
Those are very interesting.
That first clip was amazing to me. I thought that was a really, really good one. The second one just has the mist. I wish I'd have saw the mist, that black shadow that came in on the first clip. The second one has pretty much the same exact looking kind of black shadow that just rolls in. But that is all I have for the Magnolia Hotel.
That was really good, Rip.
I like the ones I can find some kind of video clips to go with them as well.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. I need to start looking a little bit better on them.
We do got one last thing to do. We've been doing it at the beginning of all the episodes, but I kind of like throwing it here at the end. Do you want to do a wheel spin? See what we're going to investigate next?
Let's do the wheel spin. Let's go on over. We're spinning and spinning. We got Kansas.
Kansas. That'd be very interesting Kansas. To go look up.
Go and type it in. That's going to be episode 11, Kansas. Brent, phenomenal episode today.
What'd you think about the history you found of Texas?
I like Texas. It's got a lot of history.
It does. I'd like to visit out there. I've been out there once, but I didn't really have time to do anything.
I've never been to Texas.
Well, this is the Haunt series. We're not going to bore you with news. I do want to say thank you for everybody that supports us and supports what we're doing. Thank you for the likes. Thank you for the subscribes. Thank you for the follows. And we will see you
on episode 2. If they watch the main episodes. If not, see you in Kansas.
See you when we see you.
How about that? Till next time.
Have a good night, good day, good evening.
Just have a good.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.